Who are LRSN? What do they do and how can you access their services? I will be chatting to one of LRSN's founding members plus the project manager to find out more about this fantastic Lincolnshire charity. Join me for LRSN Back on Track. Hi, welcome to the very first podcast episode from the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network, LRSN. I'm your host, Ellie Codling, and I'll be bringing you a series of podcasts looking closely at the work LRSN does. During these first few episodes, we'll be delving further into the organisation's services, including health and wellbeing support, advice on any of the latest issues in the agricultural industry affecting farmers, and also how you can be a part of our charity and ways that you can support us. I've got more news on something exciting happening in May later on in the show. Now, just in case you don't know anything about the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network, we are based in Lincolnshire and we work with a fantastic group of volunteers delivering both pastoral and practical support to farmers and rural folk during periods of anxiety, stress and problems relating to their families and business. We have been helping the agricultural and rural community of Lincolnshire for over 20 years with many crises felt in farming such as flooding issues, farm payment advice, succession planning, health and wellbeing, and we are a listening ear to many families. In this first introductory podcast, I am joined by two very special guests. Firstly, one of the founders of the charity and one of the directors, Reverend Canon Alan Robson, the charity's agricultural chaplain, who has seen the charity grow and evolve over the years. My other guest is Alison Twiddy, the project manager for LRSN, who is always working hard behind the scenes with her small team to bring the services to those in need and continuing to raise the profile of the charity. So welcome, Alan and Alison.
Hello.
So, Alan, as you are one of the founders, let's start with you. Tell us, why did you set up the charity?
It grew out of my chaplaincy work, primarily. Very early on, in 1999, there was a huge range of needs. You know, there was economic need. If people can remember back then, wheat was around £80 a tonne and less. So there was a lot of economic need. There was huge changes in the food chain. More processors were being shut down, centralized. You went from about 15 processors down to 5 or 6 in every sector. So there was massive changes going on. And there was this abhorrent level of stress or isolation, suicide and farm accidents. You know, it was around 1999. It just seemed a perfect storm of everything. And I was little old me on my own. It didn't take very long, matter of months, to realize this was such a big task. It needed more people. And at that time, there was a wider rural problem. You know, schools were closing, pubs were closing, you know, transport and access issues. And so the early grouping of what was then Lincolnshire Rural Stress Network had people on the board who were passionate about need and people's vulnerability and poverty and families struggling. And it was a big agenda when I first joined. But it, you know, I realized I couldn't do this on my own. I needed more help. I needed more people. One of our first chairs, I chaired for the first few years, 2 or 3 years, and then Stuart Hemington came on board, a man of beloved memory. And he said, we can't solve all the rural problems. We need to focus. And Alan set up this farming group. Let that be our focus. Let's concentrate on farmers and farming families and farm workers. And it grew. It literally grew out of the landscape of Lincolnshire. I could see a need. And I felt in my heart that there was something that I was finding really fulfilling. It emerged out of a sort of intuitive sense that faith, food and farming, they all matter.
Yeah, it all makes sense what you're saying there, Alan, that link between what you were doing and the people you were seeing. You can totally see how you had that calling to do it. So with that in mind, what are the services that you have and that you can access through LRSN? from what's grown from there?
Yeah, I mean, it's grown like Topsy, really, and continues to grow. But essentially, it is still about fulfilling that need that Alan described of people who reach difficult points, crisis points in their lives and livelihoods and need a shoulder to cry on, a listening ear. And we try to be that shoulder to cry on and listening ear through a fantastic group of volunteers. And that builds on, again, exactly Alan's kind of ethos of making sure that the charity is built on those foundations of wanting to help and people who genuinely want to help, give their time, give their skills, et cetera, et cetera. So the services include that one-to-one casework service, which is what Alan kind of started off, you know, said, come and help me, I need your help. That's essentially what we are. So we have that casework service, but over the years it's grown and we've introduced health screening at the local markets, livestock markets and horticultural auction, and a helpline that's available. So we try to be accessible all the time. You know, time doesn't respect crises, does it? Or rather, crises doesn't respect time. You know, you need to be available and accessible. So we have a helpline that's open every day of the year. Again, a team of volunteers who answer all those calls. And then we have outreach, again, at the markets and other areas of our work in which we're trying to prevent crises from happening. So we do some stuff with young farmers, for example, on mental health. We were part of the Prince's Farm Resilience Programme, which is about enabling small mixed farms to be able to prepare for what the future holds. And at the moment, that's really what we're all about, because there's lots of challenges coming the way to agriculture and we want to be ready for them. So
I think one of the wonderful things, Ellie, and this has helped us to reflect a little bit, is that the generosity and kindness of the farming community of Lincolnshire have supported us very generously, and individuals. There's no contribution that's too small or indeed too large, but every contribution in time and money is about the people of Lincolnshire and particularly the farming community supporting the farming community.
Yeah, definitely. And for you, Alison, you're at the sharp end of the charity day in, day out. What are your team busy with on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, we certainly are. I mean, at the moment, for example, and I don't know whether you're aware, Lincolnshire has long escaped the ravages of TB that have been a significant issue for livestock farmers in other parts of the country, but no longer. And we're responding to that by upskilling our volunteers, caseworkers, to understand the technical aspects of what that means, and also the human aspects and how to support those going through the kinds of problems that are inevitably caused by, you know, inconclusive TB tests or even positive TB tests. And we've just finished our own training program. We have a very varied and diverse training program. So we've just done about upskilling ourselves about what the challenges are that are coming to us in agriculture. We've had some training on succession planning, because that is clearly, particularly going forward, going to be an issue with everything that's going to happen in the future. Succession is always a massive problem and a significant area for us and our casework. And it causes immense problems within family farming businesses and families just in general. So succession planning was another one. And for us ourselves as caseworkers and volunteers, we've just had a boundaries training, which is about making sure that we look after ourselves and we look after the people that we are helping, so that we are making sure that we fulfill their expectations and they understand the boundaries of what we can and can't deliver, which is quite a challenge for us, because we try to be all things to all people, to be honest, and we very much match our casework approach to the individual problem. So we don't have a one size fits all. So it's really important that we make sure that we and the people who come to us for help know what we can deliver and how that's going to happen.
It's quite clear that you all very much got your fingers on the pulse of what is potentially going to be problems, as well as the day-to-day problems that people are facing it rurally in Lincolnshire and for farmers. So there's obviously a clear need for those services. the charity's been going a long time now and your demand is ever increasing. How do people access those services? If they're hearing these, what you're offering, what's the best way to reach out to you? You've mentioned you've got a helpline.
Yeah, we've got a helpline. Yeah, we've got a website, lrsn.co.uk. You can contact us through that. We've got an email function on there too. One of the other ways that we're trying to address the fact that we can't get out to people at the moment is we're just about to introduce some digital wellbeing clinics. We call it our version of click and collect. So it's click, book, chat, other ways that people can access what was our health screening and outreach at the markets is to be able to book those kind of sessions online with our two nurses. So,
yeah, I love that. The click, what was it? Click, book, chat. That's brilliant. You've got to make these things easy and accessible, haven't you? Because when you're in that point of crisis, you're busy, you've got too much. It's the overwhelm, isn't it? So it's fantastic. You're making it easy and accessible as well. So go to the website and we'll put that in the show notes as well, that website address for you to easily find. Now, all these services as well, like you say, it takes a team of people and you rely a lot on volunteers. Tell us a bit more about the role they play in the organisation.
Okay, so we've got 22 volunteers and 11 trustees, and mustn't forget that our trustees are all volunteers as well, and they all fulfil a fantastic role in terms of steering the direction of the charity and keeping us in line with what's required with regards to governance, but more than that, making sure we have the financial capacity and skills within our organisation to be able to deliver the service. So first of all, the trustees. And then 22 other volunteers who were split into three groups, really, mainly three groups. We have about 11 caseworkers who deliver the frontline services. And then the helpline, which I've just described. And then we have another gang of volunteers who we call our marketing and PR team. And they help us raise the profile and raise funds for the organisation. So things like online events at the moment, for example, and in our going day, Golf Days, which is one of our major fundraisers, our charity auction, which we have at our AGM, and then part of the Lincolnshire Rural Charities Dinner, Countryside Links, Lincolnshire Show, all of those kind of things. When you're talking about volunteers, it's as much about the social aspects, and we've really missed those kind of points where we were able to celebrate what we've achieved together. So we're hoping to get back with that.
And if you wanted to become a volunteer, how do you get involved with that?
Same way, really, Ellie. You know, website, give us a call, drop us an email, even ring the helpline. You know, if that's the only number you can find, ring the helpline. Somebody will pass the message on for us.
Fantastic. So for you, Alan, it's been there from the start. What difference have you seen the charity has made to the Lincolnshire farming community over these years?
LRSN is a volunteer-led organisation, essentially. And the difference it has made and increasingly normalising that ability to say, if I'm having a mental health problem or a practical problem or a social problem, I think increasingly LRSN's presence has normalised, you know, the possibility of finding a solution. You know, I think in the early days, we would have struggled much harder to get people to speak to us. But now people are respecting what LRSN delivers, can give. And so there's been this growing acceptance and embracing and recognizing that they can be embraced by very supportive people. But we're very, very fortunate to have access to a whole range of professional people who will initially give some of their time for free to just help us as volunteers, to help an individual or a farming family to find a path through to a solution that's right for them. You know, for both chaplaincy and LRSN as they move forward, is we have a massive food problem in the UK. Increasingly, I see a role for LRSN, and I guess I as chaplain can be more campaigny. 8 to 10 million people in the United Kingdom live in food poverty. It's a national disgrace. You know, so the right to food is a very important campaign. I think LRSN and chaplaincy being aware of those bigger drives, those bigger pictures. And I think LRSN has taken on board a lot of those changes. I guess part of my role is I keep throwing these googlies from the left and saying, well, what about this? Now, you might be able to do something about it or you might not.
What you've just said, I think, is intrinsically at the heart of LRSN and the chaplaincy. It's that kind of moral compass, if you like, which is what Alan's role brings to LRSN. It is that kind of ethical challenge that brings with it the need for us as an organisation, as you say, Alan, not necessarily to be that campaigner, which is kind of where your role comes in, but to be part of that, have those ethical values at our heart. You know, for example, being non-judgmental, which is, you know, being open to new ideas, being open to the possibility that someone may not make the choice that you want or you feel that they should make, but they're still deserving of your help. Mm. And I think it's those kind of things. For me, Alan's chaplaincy is a much wider ranging, it has a much broader range than LRSN, which is part of his chaplaincy, but at its heart, it has that ethical thread running through it.
Yeah, and you say there, Alan, that you throw in something from the left there going, what about this, what about that? But I think every organisation needs that, don't they, to keep it moving forward, to keep its finger on the pulse and thinking, what is it we need? What are the services we're offering? Because from what you're both saying, I get the feeling, do you come across people that come to you for help for something, but don't realise the wider picture of the extra support and help you can give them, and it ends up going down many paths of support for them? Do you come across that?
Yes, I think that would be generally true. You know, there's never just one issue. You think you're going for one particular thing, and then a whole range of Pandora's box opens, and there's worry about an elderly relative, or a worry about a son or daughter. There's a worry about the bank manager, and they all interweave. And that's true of all our lives, isn't it? It's signposting and guiding, because we can't do everything. We end up signposting to a range of people. That would be true, wouldn't it, Alison?
Yeah, absolutely. I can remember, I'm going to talk about the first time I went out on a case with you. We walked into this farm kitchen and I was a complete rookie, you know, and I'm not from a farming background. And the scale of what was presented on that day with regard to debt and legal problems and future farming and relationship problems. And I can remember sitting there thinking, oh, my goodness, how on earth are we going to unravel this? I'm feeling very much under pressure because this person had come to Alan, actually, for help. And he'd taken me along as my first kind of case. Felt completely out of my depth, inadequate, et cetera, et cetera. But what I realised was that you don't necessarily have to have all the answers. You need to be able to listen. You need to be able to have some empathy. And then you need to be able to pick things off, for example, one by one, and engage that help that Alan said. If you don't know the answer, somebody else will. And we make it our business to find out who those other people are and join with them to hold that person. So you can walk down a farm drive, can't you, Alan, even though you don't know that person. And you can find something to talk to them about, and you can find a way of helping them.
Well, I think that gives us a much better understanding of who you guys are and what you can do to help, and all those services that are out there for people to access. So thanks so much, Alan and Alison, for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you, Ellie.
Thank you.
Well, there we go. So many helpful services there. And as Alan and Alison say, we're always looking for ways in which people can support us and spread the word about what we do. One of the ways is by signing up for our Mad May Marathon. We would like you to run, jog, walk or cycle a marathon for LRSN during May and help raise a profile of our wonderful charity within Lincolnshire. This is for all abilities. We're not expecting you to run the full 26 miles in one go, although you can if you like. We are hoping that people of all abilities will get involved. Physical and mental well-being go hand in hand, and we hope this activity will highlight that. So go to lrsn.co.uk to sign up and get involved. Or maybe you could offer your support in another way, whether that is a monthly donation, an annual fundraiser, or perhaps your business's chosen charity for the year. Again, that website is lrsn.co.uk to find the best way for you to support us. You can also find it available in our show notes. So in our next episode, we will be finding out more about the health and wellbeing related services LRSN offers, and we'll be chatting to health and wellbeing lead Julie Steele, plus her panel of guests. So until then, remember, you're not alone. LRSN will help you get back on track.